This is The Variety Artist, episode 73. I'm John Abrams, that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world. I just finished another crazy summer. 100 shows in 2 months. Not 99, not 101, but exactly 100. I counted. Now I have a week off. A week off before I start the school season. Whew. Truth is, I haven't had time to do any new interviews. But I was talking to Louis Fox the other day. And by the way, if you haven't listened to his interview, go do it now. It's amazing. So I was talking to Louis, and he said he had just listened to my interview with Doug Scheer, and that it was fantastic. And I thought, that's a great idea. What better time than now to share the Doug Scheer interview with you? It's the beginning of the school season, and he has a ton of great info for you. So I listened to it again. I forgot how amazing it is. Doug talks about what a typical school assembly day looks like, what kind of shows to do, how to promote your show, pretty much everything. So here it is, the school assembly market with Doug Scheer.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Our guest this week is an amazing magician and one of the top school assembly entertainers in the country. He has at least 12 very different assembly shows and numerous magic shows. About.com calls him the best of the best. The Magic Castle newsletter in Hollywood says one of the world's best children's magicians. And the Jerusalem Post calls him America's best school performer. Variety Artists, I give you Doug Scheer.
Hello.
Hey, glad to have you on my podcast, Doug.
You know, I didn't mean to say hello that way. My son's watching the Seinfeld reruns, and we just watched the talking belly button episode. So that's
hello.
Hello. No, this is awesome, man. Thanks for doing this, and thanks for being one of the guys that's out there giving, you know, give. Doing a podcast is a great way to do it. So it's fun to talk to you. Finally get to meet you. You and I have been on Facebook for a couple of months now. Finally get to talk to you. So it's cool. Thanks.
Right. I'm very excited about talking to you because we're in the same market and you give to a lot of entertainers also. So we have a lot of that in common.
It's a fun thing. It's a fun thing. Keeps us going, right?
Something yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let's get right into it. What's your personal life look like? You have a wife and she works with you in the shows, or how does that all work?
Yeah, I have a personal life. So to answer that question, yes, I do. Unlike some magicians, maybe. I don't know. No, yeah. Here's the thing. I got out of college, you know, ages ago and started doing school shows. And then my fiance said, hey, I want to be in a show. And so I wrote a show for her. It turned out to be a big illusion show. It wasn't a one man show like I was used to doing. It was an illusion show with a big van load of stuff. And I had to buy a cargo van and we started doing big illusions and traveling around doing our school shows. And then one day she decides after we get married to go and get pregnant, you know, the nerves. Oh, I know. Yeah. Right. So suddenly she wasn't fitting in the little appearing girl trick anymore. So we started modifying the show. And eventually she started making these babies come out, which was a really cool magic trick.
That is a good trick.
I know. I can't do that.
The appearing child trick.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's so nerve-wracking when that happens, though. It really is. Because you're like, I'm not ready for this.
How many do you have?
Yeah, three. I got two boys and I got a girl, and they're all in showbiz in their own little way. So we're kind of like a showbiz family. My youngest daughter is a gymnast. She's assisted me on stage in a theater show that I do in the summertime. My son is in high school. He's a theater singer. He's a choir guy and a theater guy. He's been in the musicals the past couple of years, and he also has become one of my assistants in some of my shows that I do. And then my oldest one, my firstborn, my boy, he is a he's turning into a YouTube sensation. He's one of those kids that I got to tell you, he's making money on YouTube, and other kids are asking him how he's doing it. He's got over 200,000 subscribers. He's got like 20 million minutes of YouTube videos been watched on his channel.
What is he doing?
You know, it's crazy, and we can talk about this, but you and I both know to be successful in something, you got to be in the niche market. You got to find your little niche, and the more you focus, the more successful you can be.
Yep.
When he was a little kid, he used to love playing games. We'd go to Walmart. When he was a baby, we'd go to Walmart and sit on the Arctic Thunder, the electronic jet ski or snowmobile machine. And then we'd go and have a hot dog over in the cafe. And I think the people at Walmart started thinking we were poor because we were there like three nights a week. They started giving us free food. So we're eating dinner. We're eating dinner at Walmart. But he loved video games. And then he graduated to Chuck E. Cheese. And then one day he started making videos of himself winning games and claw machines. You know, claw machines, those crane games where you go into stuffed animal.
Oh, yeah.
He started winning those and videotaping them and started throwing them up on YouTube. And suddenly people started following him. And now he's got, oh, man, he's got, I think, over 700 videos on YouTube. His channel's Carson Claws. His name is Carson, which is a funny story in itself. His name is very funny. Carson Claws. He's got a huge following, and kids love him. And he's got people all over the world sending him prizes, and of course he gets money off the advertising, and it's crazy. It's completely crazy. So he's got his own celebrity, and my other two kids are performers in their own right. My wife is actually an autism advocate. She speaks all around the world about biomedical approaches to treating kids with autism, so I'm incredibly proud of her. She's spoken in Maryland to not the CDC, but people who advise the CDC. Big stuff. Big stuff. So that's pretty cool. So getting back to your question, yes, she has been my assistant in the past. She still is now that my kids are older and grown. In fact, tomorrow morning we're dropping my daughter off at middle school, and then we're dragging the trailer out to do a couple of shows. So if my schedule fits her schedule, having her work with me is a fantastic thing. And if not, I've got a girl I work with as an actress. I've had about four or five different assistants through the ages working in my school shows, but I finally hired a legitimate real actress. This woman's done film, she's done commercials, she's done voiceover work, and what she brings to my shows now is unbelievable. Instead of going through the motions and delivering the lines, she's been able to develop some incredibly in-depth characters, and she basically steals the show now when she's on stage with me. And I hate her for it, and I love her for it, because she takes the show to a whole different level.
So do a lot of your shows have two people in them?
I've got 12 different shows. Let me think about this. One, two, three, four. Four of my shows are bigger illusion shows. Five of them. And then I've got 12 in all. Five of them are a bigger program, a bigger illusion show. And we bring in a trailer. Not that, even though the show is bigger, it takes me just the same amount of time to set up. I can set up a show in 30 minutes, regardless if it's an illusion show with a full backdrop and sounds that's in five different illusions, or if it's just me working out of a suitcase, because with two people working, it's a choreographed dance. When you set up a show, when you're doing it so often, you know, it's a matter of economy of motion. If you're going that way, push this thing over there. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know how that is. It all becomes something you can do while you're sleeping, but it becomes a matter of, with her, I can't talk to her. I can't tell her a story or talk to her while she's setting up, because she can't do two things at once. Oh. she'll hang the backdrops backwards, or she'll put them in the wrong order. I'm like, what are you doing? So we have a lot of fun. I like laughing. She's only been with me for 7 years now, and she's still messing things up when I try and talk to her.
Yeah, so. You do this for a long time. I know during shows, I've been in the middle of a show and thought about, gee, do I need to go pick up that milk on the way home or bread, or what do I have to do in the middle of the show? I've thought about that.
Oh my gosh. You know, and thank God for Siri now and our little, because they're our second brains, our GPS, our second brains. We don't need to think anymore. Just, you know, tell Siri what you need and she'll tell you when you got to do it, right?
That's right. And as long as the right music comes up, you're golden.
Yeah, sometimes the right music doesn't come up. You're like, what was I thinking when I set this show up? I pushed in the wrong soundtrack, but whatever.
You have trailer shows and you have one-man shows. Now, are all of those educational school assemblies?
Yeah, all but one. My one show that I do, it's called The Laugh Factory. And you know what? This kind of takes me back to your introduction. I don't like being called a magician. I don't call myself a magician. And it's not that I hate it and despise it, but there's kind of a big backstory to that. So my magic show, I actually call The Laugh Factory. It's a comedy magic show for kids, but I don't call it a magic show by any means. That is the only show that I do that is not educational. It's 100% fun and silly, and it's a family night show, or it's a blue and gold banquet show, or it's a fair festival show, or that sort of program. Everything else is completely educational. But to go back to the introduction, the reason I'm not calling myself a magician is because when you call yourself a magician, I think you pigeonhole yourself.
Yep.
I learned that a long time ago. And back when I started doing shows for money, doing birthday parties, like when I was, you know, 15, 16, years old, there was a magic club in town, and it was run by a guy named Milt Court. Milt Court was a famous close-up magician, wrote a lot of books. A guy named Claire Cummings. Claire was one of our local celebrities. He was one of the Twin Pines, Milky the Clowns. And Carol Fox, who was also a big name to the magician community. These guys were all my mentors. And they used to get together with us in a mall once a month or once every couple of months and teach us magic and tell us. And it wasn't magic they were teaching us. They were teaching us presentation. Milt Court gave me my first egg bag, and I didn't do anything with it. So I ended up giving one to Jeb Hobson, which is kind of funny. I should have done something with the egg bag. Hobson took it and made it his career. Yeah. But I started looking at the guys around me. They all call themselves magicians. And I'm like, oh, man. And out of complete and total arrogance, I didn't want to be associated with some of these guys because they weren't very good. At least in my 16-year-old mind, I figured these guys are horrible and I'm 10 times better.
Of course.
Because as a 16-year-old, you're better than everybody. You know everything. And when you're looking back on it, you're an arrogant jerk. But I didn't call myself a magician. I started calling myself a children's entertainer or a children's performer. And I kept on doing that. And then as I got older and more mature, and probably in the past 20 years of my life, I kept not calling myself a magician, not out of arrogance and thinking I was better than everybody else, but because I was not anywhere near the quality of what a real magician was. You know, when you look at these guys now that are out there doing stuff, you look at the guys that have got their own shows in New York, and you look at the guys that are on TV, and you look at these sleight of hand guys and a magician. Oh my gosh, these guys deserve the title of magician. I do not deserve the title of magician because I'm a terrible sleight of hand artist. You know, I don't know any card tricks. There's so much I don't know that I no longer call myself a magician, not because out of arrogance, but now because out of simple respect for the guys that do. It's almost like being knighted. I think it's a title you can't just bestow upon yourself. I think it has to be earned.
Yeah. There's a couple of great lessons in that I'm kind of the same way. I have my school assembly shows that I do, and I have a number of magic tricks that I do, but overall I'm an entertainer.
Yeah.
And I bill and I sell and I market the school shows as entertainment shows. Right. I don't call them a magic show. I call it the bully game, random acts of character, et cetera, yeah, et cetera. They seem to sell better there too, because like you're saying, I'm not pigeonholed in that magic market.
You're not lumped together with every other magician. Kind of a turning point when I started doing school shows is I had my brochure and it said Sheer Magic Productions. You know, my name is Sheer and I can do Sheer Magic Productions. That sounds so cool. That was my name. And I did my Uncle Sam, my history show for this particular elementary school, and the PTA mom was like all gushing over it and says, I want you to meet the principal. We want to book more of your shows. So she marches me into the principal's office. We sit down and she goes, this is Doug Sheer and this is his brochure. And he grabs the brochure and he looks at it and goes, oh, it's a magic show. We don't book magic shows because it says Sheer Magic Productions on top. And she goes, no. He just did one of the school shows for us and it was great. And there was some magic in it, but it wasn't a magic show. Nope. We don't want a magic show. We don't want a magic show. So I walked out of there thinking, what? You know what? This man didn't understand. What was he thinking? Well, he was picturing maybe a magic show that wasn't educational, or a magic show he saw that wasn't very entertaining, and he figured every magician was the same. And so from then on, I changed my name from Sheer Magic Production to Sheer Genius Assembly Shows, just to kind of get away from that and fit closer to what maybe a client was looking for. Because you don't want to pigeonhole yourself. And if you don't call yourself a magician, you don't have to compete with all the magicians. And I got to tell you, there's some great magicians here in Detroit. There's guys that I just worship and admire. They're so funny and so witty and so talented and so skilled that I don't want to go up against them in terms of a job. So don't even include me because you're going to blow me away. I don't want to feel bad.
Right, I'm with you. I live right outside of LA, and we have so many great magicians here. It's tough to compete in the magic world. But as an entertainer, it's a different story.
Build your own world. When you're a school show guy, you can do anything you want to do. If you want to do a song or a dance or tap dance or something, you can, because you're not calling yourself a magician anymore. You're a school show performer, right?
Right. And so, and it's smart to do all those things because it's easier to sell the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no skills outside of pretending to be a magician sometimes. Maybe you do, but for the guys that do, you know, there are some guys out there that do school shows that kill me. They do ventriloquism and puppetry and they sing and I hate them. I hate them so much because they have talent. And I've been getting by in my entire life on having no skill whatsoever. So that's my advantage.
Me too.
The secret to being a great school show performer is have no talent.
Have no talent. Put something together and
right, exactly.
So what was your first school show? What was the first one that you did?
You know what's funny? Harry Blackstone Jr. came to town. It was 1986. I was up in college. I graduated in 87, so I was a junior. And he came in town for the state of Michigan because it was the Michigan sesquicentennial. And that means 150 years. So Michigan was 150 years old. So he came in town and said, hey, team of magicians. And there were like maybe 10 of us. We were all dubbed the sesquicentennial magicians, and they gave us a flag that said Michigan sesquicentennial, and your requirement of doing a magic show is to produce this flag sometime in your show. Okay. Right. So we were all given a couple malls around the country, high profile gifts, maybe a couple fair festivals or fairs, but I did a couple of malls with the job, and I produced my little flag, and this teacher came up to me and she said, hey, this was kind of cool. You did this little magic show about Michigan. Can you do a magic show about the Constitution? I go, well, yeah, but why would I do that? And she said, because next year is the 200th anniversary of the Constitution. It's been 200 years since the signing of the Constitution. She goes, and schools would go crazy over that because they teach that in the schools. So the year I graduated from college, the timing was perfect. I put together this show called The Constitutional Conjuring Show, which is a horrible name. But I went into the schools doing this history show, which taught the kids all about the Constitution and what it meant, where it came from, the major events that led up to it, and what the different parts of the Constitution said. That show eventually morphed into the Uncle Sam's Comedy Jam show, which is more of a Bill of Rights show, because a couple of years later, suddenly it was the anniversary of the Bill of Rights being signed. And that show I still do today. And so I wrote that show back in 1986, and here it is 2018, I think, you know, 32 years later, if I did my math right. Yeah, and I'm still doing that show, which is crazy. In fact, that's a show, we'll talk more about that later. I franchise out now, and I've got a lot of guys around the country doing that. What, that's one of my particular shows I franchised out. So spreading the love.
Talk about that. Annex, a friend of mine, I think he does that show out here, right?
Yeah, Tim's another one of those guys that I hate because Tim is so talented. He is the kind of guy, he can walk on stage and with his smile and his personality, he can entertain you without even lifting a finger. He's so good.
Yeah, he was originally out of L.A. here and moved into Central California, I think.
Yeah, he's up north of somewhere. I can't keep track of California. But yeah, he's north of you somewhere. Yeah.
It's giant. Where are you out of?
Me? Michigan. Yeah. Suburban Detroit. Yeah, okay. Suburban Detroit, which is good because, you know, I'm 5 hours from Chicago. I'm 5 hours from Toronto. I'm 5 hours from Cincinnati. I'm 5 hours from Pittsburgh. In a quick, easy morning drive, I can get to any one of those locations and do a school show. Not that I want to. I want to stay home. I don't want to drive. You know how horrible, you know, driving is. Thank goodness for podcasts, though, because now that makes the drive go a lot faster than it used to.
That is the absolute truth. I mean, you say 5 hours. I live where I live because I'm 2 hours from San Diego, 2 hours from Riverside, 2 hours from, you know, 2 hours from South Bay. For me, 2 hours is a good radius.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. I don't want to go outside of 2 hours. I can if I need to. 2 hours to me is my, yeah, if I can stay within an hour, that's even better. You know, of course, you know that. Yeah, any more than 5 hours, it starts to be a little expensive, you know, and I make my price accordingly.
Yeah, I live in a place called Orange County. It's in California, and we have something called the Segerson Center that books out a lot of school shows. Oh. And we can go back to the magician thing. I originally sent in my videotape when videotapes were big years ago to them, and they turned me down because they said, we don't book magicians.
Yeah, there you go.
Another lesson for you.
Exactly the same lesson. You know, if it happens here, it happens there, it happens anywhere. Guys thinking about getting into the school show market, if they are magicians, they may want to rephrase it and rename themselves. And it's funny, I did do a show once. I remember a PTA mom or a teacher came up to me and said, hey, you know, we like your show a lot. You know what's funny? She said, your magic tricks in your show were even better than the magicians that we had. And it's like, it's so funny because, like, I really am a magician lady, you know? It's like, hey, success. You don't think I'm a magician? Now I'm a happy guy. So
when you're putting together a new show with a new theme, how do you come up with that theme?
My approach, and if you look at my website is laid out the same way. I believe there are curriculum-based programs, which are going to be the things that kids learn in class, be it history or science or math or whatever. And then there's character-based programs, which kind of encompass everything else, you know, be it the bully-proofing or be it the conflict resolution or be it the diversity or one of those programs. And my character shows all evolved basically out of what was going on in the world. I did a show about life skills and basic character stuff for a little while. I started doing the show, and that show kind of came about in a funny way. I was in an elementary school once, and a principal says to me, "Hey, I need your life skills show next year." I said, "Well, yeah, that's great, but I don't have a life skills show. You have me confused." He goes, "You have 1 year," and he hands me a 3-ring binder, okay? And he goes, "This is all you need to know. And this is going to be huge, you know." And this guy was a big fan of mine, and he's like, he wanted to help me out. He's like, "Trust me, put this together, and it's going to be a big thing." I delved into it, and I put together a life skills show, which is like the character counts program, and sure, the pillars of character, and that kind of stuff. So I did the character show for a while, maybe a year or two, and then Columbine happened. Oh. Yeah, and then after Columbine, nobody wanted the life skills show anymore. Suddenly, it was all about bullies. Bullying, you know, and so that show morphed into a bully prevention show using character traits to keep the kids bully free. At the time, I was already doing a conflict resolution show based on some information I got from another school performer, a guy named Joe Romano. Okay. I met Joe a zillion years ago, and Joe had a really big contract with AT&T, and he was doing a conflict resolution show. He said to me, an unknown guy, because we kind of met over dinner in Atlantic City once, "Hey, you should do a conflict resolution show." And I'm like, "Oh, I probably should," because I was looking for new programs to add to my repertoire. So I went home and I researched that, and I put together this show called Less Trouble Problem Investigator, which teaches the kids 4 simple steps to solve problems. Turns out, I did that show once at a school. The teacher walks up, she goes, "Oh, this is crazy, because I'm going through marriage counseling right now with my husband. This is exactly what we're doing in marriage counseling."
Perfect.
You know, it's communication skills. It's I messages. It's simple communication skills. So having that show in my back pocket and having this bully show, which resulted as a result of the current events, gave me 2 character shows. And I kept those running for a long time. Then all of a sudden, the Twin Towers came down. Mm-hmm. And now it morphed into tolerance and understanding other cultures and acceptance of others in the schools. They were teaching that. And so that is what segued into me developing my Diversity Circus show, which has kind of been my flagship show and what a lot of guys know me as, because I finally released it on video, on DVD, and I put it together into a graphic novel. And so that's part of the package that I sell as well, so guys can see what I do. So yeah, the show ideas come from what the schools are doing. The schools' concerns will morph and change. For a long time, a lot of schools were going for this Korean school initiative. There was money from the federal government saying, "Hey, you know, you got to teach ecology and recycling and environmental sciences and that kind of stuff." And one of the components of that and getting the grant money was having an outside speaker come in, you know, someone outside the school as a professional. You know, they picked up, I started doing this environmental show for the schools. That actually was a show I had in my back pocket, because when I got out of college, my college roommate turned out he was a guy at Dow Chemical in the public relations department. And the PR department tasked him with getting the message out to the community what Dow Chemical was doing. So he called me up and said, "Hey, can you do a science show?" And I said, "Of course I can do a science show.
Of course I can.
Of course I can." And that turned into a contract with 100 elementary schools in the northern Michigan area. And then eventually evolved into a show I took out on my own. I still do today, which is another one of my franchises. So we did that. So basically, what shows I do come out of the needs of the school. Now, there's always reading shows. Anybody who works in schools probably has a reading show of some sort, because, you know, March is reading month, and there's Read Across America programs, and there's a lot of demand. I've always told guys that are wanting to get into the school show market, you can develop a show and push it on the schools and try then get to buy what you want, or you can develop a show they're already looking for.
Right.
It's like pull marketing. You know, if you have a product that they're looking for and suddenly they find out about you, it's an easy sell. So with the schools, if you're doing a character show, easy sell, because they're looking for that. If you're doing a curriculum-based show that enhances and reinforces what they're teaching at school, maybe it's math, maybe it's fractions, maybe it's angles, maybe it's patterns or whatever it is. If that's all in your math show, you know, the teachers get all excited, because now you can bring in equipment and props, resources the teachers can't afford to bring in, and you can present it in a different way. And you're telling the kids the exact same thing they're hearing in class, but you know what it is. You know, if you're a parent, you tell your kid 100 times to pick up their room or clean up the room. They don't do it until the aunt comes over and goes, "Hey, you should clean up your room."
It's true. Even with me, I talk to 300 kids a day per assembly, you know, 600 kids a day. Talk to them about bullying and character and all different things. They all listen. But then I come home and tell my own kids, and it's a different story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's only dad telling me that.
Right. You don't know anything. It doesn't mean anything until you hear from five different sources, right? That's what's cool. You're that expert. When you're the outside assembly show performer, you're the unknown guy or you're the stranger. You come in and tell them that. They listen to you. Or you turn into the uncle. You're the guy that goes to school every year or three times or twice a year. Suddenly you're the funny guy. And now they're going to listen to the funny guy more than they're going to listen to their teacher. You know, it's the way the human mind works. I think we all work that way, right?
I think so. It is easier to sell to somebody something that they already want. When I first started doing the bully game, I would go from school to school before I had that put together. And because I was doing my animal magic show, so I'd go from school to school and I would talk to the PTA person and the principal and ask them, what is it that I can bring to the school that they would enjoy, that they could learn something from that the teachers aren't teaching right now?
Yeah.
And the answer at that time, you know, 10, 12, 14 years ago, was bullying, bullying, bullying. So I used what they said to create my show, and it was much easier to sell that way.
They're happy to tell you. All you have to do is ask or find a teacher in your neighborhood. You know, if you're thinking about putting together a school show, you can just go to that expert. They're the ones living it day in and day out and ask them, you know, you've had a couple of shows. What's good? What's bad? What do you guys want? What's there too much of? Mm-hmm. You know, what can I do for you? And there's always something on the horizon. I'm getting requests for shows about manners. Can you do a show on manners? Because kids don't know how to say please or thank you. Mm-hmm. You really? What a surprise.
You know? That's interesting. And it's kind of true.
It is true.
It's absolutely true. One of my pet peeves is people not saying goodbye on the phone.
I'm going to finish this podcast by just slamming my computer shut. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's it. All right. Thanks for joining me, Click.
Right, exactly. Well, just, you know, when I go to CVS and I buy a stick of gum, just say thank you, lady. Just say thank you. Don't hand me my receipt and my change and look at me, okay? Come in. Oh, talk about pet peeves. Really? Just say thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a customer. Thank you for coming in. Thank you. Have a nice day. Anything, right? Ugh.
It's like a lost art nowadays.
Don't get me fired up. I'll talk about pet peeves all day long. Don't put the dollars in my hand before you put the change because it slips onto the ground at Walmart or at McDonald's, right? Oh, sorry. Really? You're sorry?
And then you're in the drive-thru. You have to open the door.
Right.
For like 11 cents.
You're not going to do it. Right. You know that kid. You know that kid's going out there and cleaning up at the end of the day. I made $8 a quarter. So, wow, look at this. It's a conspiracy, man. They're all against us. I'm telling you.
That's why they put the change in your hand that way.
Exactly. I know. It's a conspiracy. It's all planned out, right?
All right. So back to school shows. What does a school day look like for you? What does a day look like going to school shows look like for you?
Dragging my butt out of bed at 6 a.m.
That is the toughest part.
Gosh, right. Yeah.
You're lucky if you get to sleep in until 6 a.m.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and you have kids, you got to, you know, make them lunches and throw them on the bus or shoot them out the door or something. But no, it's a matter of getting up in the morning, double checking the computer to make sure I didn't get any emails or text messages overnight saying, oh my gosh, our school is flooded, we're closed, or checking the weather. Being in Michigan, schools are closed for the most ridiculous reasons in the wintertime. Double checking that always, regardless of what the weather is. You know, even if it's a beautiful sunny day outside, a school could be closed for some reason. And the PTA mom or the teacher didn't take your cell phone home, so she has no idea how to get a hold of you. Mm-hmm. So I always do that first. And then always the night before, my van or my trailer is loaded up and either hitched up or ready to go with a full tank of gas, because last thing I want to do is be late then have to get gas. So there's always gas in the car on the way home. Yeah, and then it's off to a school. I arrive to a school about 45 minutes ahead of time. You always check into the office, get the loading instructions, have the custodian make sure they have what you need. And then the first show or the second show, and then it's off to lunch somewhere. And I used to do 10 schools a week consistently. That's before the economy fell apart. But now I'll find myself with an afternoon off here or there. I don't mind that so much. Now that I'm older, it's like I don't mind it so much. I'll go home. I'll sweep the deck. I'll mow the lawn. I'll do some emails. Because really, it's the big stressful thing about being a school show performer is you're doing everything on your own. Unless you can hire an office assistant, it's a matter of getting back and replying to those emails or doing it. My office is typically in my car on my laptop. I'm stealing McDonald's Wi-Fi in their parking lot or using my phone to just make those confirmation calls or call people back or email people back and try and book the additional shows. Yeah, and then it's off to a second show, typically in the afternoon, and then it's a drive home. The best thing about being a school show performer is if you're working locally, you're going to be home before your kids are off the bus. Yeah.
With their homework. That's what I did when my kids were growing up.
Yeah. And you know what? And that's, I think that's what morphs a lot of guys into being a school show performer. Cause we've done everything. You've done it all too. You've done the corporate stuff. You've done the adult banquets and the birthday parties and stuff. Yeah. You get tired of working on weekends when you have kids. You want to be home for that.
Right. If in fact, on my podcast, the episode zero, I talk about that exact thing. Cause I've done so many birthday parties that I was away from my kids for the entire weekend. So that's when I started doing school assemblies, because I thought to myself, well, shoot, I'll be home by noon or one if I just do shows in the morning. And even if I do shows in the afternoon, I'm still home by 4 or 5 at the latest.
And honestly, you know, if you want to work, you do educational shows, because Monday through Friday is a lot longer of a time period and more time slots to fill than, you know, Saturday and Sunday.
You make more money doing school shows than you do birthday parties.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can make a great living doing nothing but birthday parties and restaurants and stuff. I got a bunch of friends that do. They're great, you know, and they enjoy this little lifestyle. They like Monday through Friday off, or they work evenings working at a restaurant or something, and then their birthday parties kick in on a Saturday, and they'll 3 or 4 birthday parties consistently on a weekend. They're super happy. But it's all about a lifestyle choice. And I think that's a big thing. You know, when you get into this business, what kind of lifestyle do you want to have?
Right.
You know, there's really no glamour in sitting in airports flying around the world. And, you know, I see some of these guys on Facebook all the time going, here I am at the airport again. They're world famous magicians. They want all the biggest prizes that we can bestow on these guys. And they're living out of airports, you know, and they have a family and a wife and a kid. It's like, oh, man, congratulations to you. But that's not the kind of lifestyle I really was looking forward to living.
Yeah, I wanted to be home with my kids.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That's why I made the big change.
Exactly. And you know what? It's funny. You do it too. Sometimes you go into a performance art center and stuff, and the kids are in the theaters and they're beautiful arenas and they're gorgeous and the sound is perfect. The acoustics are perfect. But honest to God, I would rather work with 400 kids smashed shoulder to shoulder on a gym floor any day than a big, beautiful auditorium filled with people. Because the dynamic is better, the energy is better, the excitement is better. You know, the show can move faster because you don't have to wait 20 minutes for a kid to get out of the balcony and come around and down and get on stage, you know?
One of the things I love about doing school assemblies is that you always have a packed house, no matter what.
Absolutely.
It's always 250, 300, 400 kids all at once, every single show.
Well, it's funny you say that. We did one of those yesterday morning. We were west of Chicago. We had a 5-hour drive west of Chicago. We had a huge room, a huge gymnasium full of kids. Then we went to their afternoon school, which was just a K-2 building.
Yeah.
There were about 70 kids in the whole school. And I walk out there, I'm standing around, and I go, well, let me know when they're all here. Oh, they're all here. I'm like, what? This is your whole school? I got to tell you, if I was a parent wanting my kid to get a good education, I'd be plopping my kid in that school in a second, because each classroom had about 10 kids. 10 kids in the classroom. That's unheard of.
That's a deal.
Yeah, it's a deal. Talk about getting your money's worth, right? Man, crazy.
So you go from doing 350 or 400, doing a performance in front of 350 or 400 kids to doing a performance in front of 70. I do the same thing.
You do the same thing. You do the same thing. You know, and then there's an outdoor park that I work every year. And on a Friday afternoon, you play to 700 screaming kids. And then a Saturday morning, you go to this outdoor show and it's raining. And there's one guy sitting on a bench in the rain with an umbrella. You're like, really? I got to do a show for this guy. You got to be kidding me. But you do. I got to tell you, this is funny. And this has nothing to do with school shows, but it shows a level of professionalism that I always keep in the back of my mind. Paul Kozak, who is one of our great comedy magicians, who now has I think he has his own comedy club or magic club down in Hawaii. He wrote an article for Genie Magazine once, and he was talking about how he was working in Atlantic City. Two people showed up to the comedy club that day. Two people, a guy and his wife. But you know what he did? He went out there and he kicked butt. He did the entire show just for those two people. And they came up to him afterwards and said, thank you so much. I forget the story. It was either some tragic story and they were together alone, or they just got married. And I don't know what it was. But either way, Paul doing his show for the couple, which he easily could have canceled and said, forget it, we're not doing this, go home, made such a huge impression on that couple. And they were so incredibly grateful and so incredibly thankful, you know, that it stuck with Paul the rest of his life. And it sticks with me, too, having to hear that story. Because you don't know who these people are in your audience. You don't know where they came from or what they're going through. And maybe they need a laugh, or maybe they need some education, or maybe they need something. And you're the guy who's there to give them that escapism for a couple of moments, you know. So you can walk out and be grumpy. You know, there's only 20 kids here. This stinks. I'm not doing this library ever again. Blah, 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 blah.
No, we show up and do our best because you don't know how it's going to affect that person either. If you're excited about your show and you're excited about what you're doing, even if it's two or three people in the audience, they're going to get excited too. And you don't know how they're going to be affected later on in life either.
You don't know. And that's the mark of a real professional, right? I mean, you can do a great show for 700 people, but the real mark of being a real pro is going out there and kicking butt 100% for two people.
I just did a podcast with Dan Chan. He's an amazing magician out of Northern California, and he has his own theater there. And sometimes that theater is packed and sometimes it's not. Some of the best shows are the ones where it's two or three or four or five or six people in the audience.
Yeah.
Because he can, it's almost like a private show with just him.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how important that is to those people.
Well, and you get to connect with people on a different level because no longer, and I tell friends of mine this, I kind of coach and mentor some of the guys in town, the young guys. I go, you got to go from performing. You got to get beyond performing. When you're a performer, people don't want to watch you perform. They want to connect with you. You want to connect with your audience. So the more natural you can be, I mean, that's not to say forget all your showbiz and forget stagecraft and forget those things. You always keep those in mind. But when you're going out there and delivering a script and it sounds like a canned script, you know, it just doesn't connect the way it could with an audience of two. You can't go out there and be, you know, Mr. Ringmaster, big performer guy. You're going to automatically change. I think that's a great thing to strive for. You know, if you're having fun on stage and people see you're having fun on stage and you're being natural on stage, you know, it goes back to the old Carol Burnett show. Remember when Tim Conway and Harvey Korman would go into their show and their script and they would break each other up? Memorable moments, right? And honestly, if any listeners are under 45 years old and have no idea who I'm talking about, just go on YouTube and look at Harvey Korman and Tim Conway, Carol Burnett show, and you will see these guys literally crack each other up. And they were crying. And that's the stuff, as an audience, we remember the most. They weren't performing. They were just having fun and being natural. And there was a human level of connection there, which was great. So great.
Yeah. Those are the ones they play over and over again, the ones where they're cracking each other up, not the ones that went perfectly.
No, because you know what? Here's the thing. You cannot write perfection. You cannot write it. You can't sit down at your computer and write a perfect show. You have to perform it. You have to get out there and do it.
What makes people laugh? What's fun? What's effective? What's not? I can't tell you how many times I've practiced something in my living room or in my bedroom and then gone and performed it. And the things that I think are hilarious fall flat. And the things that I think are just flat and just move on to the next point, they're hilarious to the audience.
Oh, hilarious. And you keep those in. Suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, this stays in. And that's how you develop a show. Because you could not have sat behind your computer in your desk in your house and wrote that. It had to happen. And that's how these shows evolve. And that's how they get so good. Yeah. But you know what? It's an improvisational exercise too, which they teach actors. You know this. You were an actor.
Yep.
It's the yes and. You know, if you're doing improv with somebody, you never negate what they say. You say yes or you agree to it and then you build on it. That's a lesson I think all performers need too. If a kid gets on stage or an adult gets on stage or anyone, something happens to the show, you can say no to it, bring it to a screeching, awkward halt, or you can say, yeah, sure, and just roll with the punches and see where it takes you.
I love when those crazy things happen with the kids. It used to, when I first started doing this, it used to bug me when a kid would come up and not do what I had in my mind.
That would right. Yeah.
But then as I matured and as I got older and realized that those are the little gems that we ask for, we should use those.
Yep.
They're little gifts that someone is giving us.
Well, yeah, now you got your job now is to make those little gifts recreated in every show naturally.
If you can.
Well, I'm big into stage cueing. I'm big into telling kids what to say. I'm big into letting kids deliver the funny lines. For instance, in my reading show, you have a problem on stage, and I tell the kids, oh my gosh, I've got a problem. Oh my gosh, what do you do when you have a problem? What is something you can do? And the kids, the line they're all thinking in their head is, well, you go to the library, ask the librarian. No. So I turn and I look at the kid, I go, what would you do? And she's on stage with me, and she says, I watch Dr. Phil.
Oh.
You know, which makes the teachers basically wet their pants and spit drink out of their nose. And I actually had that happen one day, and I almost wet myself. And I'm like, now that's part of the show. Now I just tell the kid, that's what you say. But she threw me for a loop because she was serious. Because she goes home every day, and mom's got Dr. Phil on at 4 p.m. So funny. So, yeah, you take those gems, and you savor them, and you stretch them, and you massage them, and you make them part of your show.
That's what I've done. In fact, I think the kids have written more of my shows than I have.
Every time. They're comedy geniuses. Kids have no idea how funny they are. They just say what's true, you know, and there's truth in comedy. And if they say what's true and it's hysterical, ugh, it's just brilliant. So many brilliant things. So my son, when he was little, he said to me, he goes, "Dad, I finally figured out when you're a grown-up." I go, "Whoa, how? How do you know you're a grown-up?" "You know, you're a grown-up, Dad, because you grow when you get up."
Oh,
oh my God.
It's perfect.
It's true.
But in a show.
He was five years old. I'm like, I do grow when I get up. I grow when I sit down. It's like, yeah.
Now you're franchising a couple of shows now?
It's when I was doing the show for Dow Chemical, and I was doing what was called the Mysteries of Science back then, and it's evolved to the Wacky Science Show. I always had a dream of kind of going, gosh, I wonder if I can spread this out. I wonder if I can get guys doing this show for me. How can I possibly continue to make money on this show if I get multiple units out there doing the show? And I figured there had to be a way. Now I have 23 guys literally around the world. I got some guys in, I got a guy in Israel. I got a couple of guys in England. I got a guy down in Reunion Island, which is off the coast of Florida, of Africa. I got a bunch of guys in America. I got some guys in Canada. They're literally all over the world. And a couple I'm forgetting about, of course, too. Oh, a couple in Spain, two guys in Spain. Basically, yeah, I package the show for them. We put a price tag on it, and it comes with everything you need. You can buy the script, and you can buy the backdrops and all the artwork and develop all the props on your own. And they're all pretty simple things. And they go off and they do it. And there's training and video training and all kinds of things. And they go off and do it. And the show is theirs to kind of create this worldwide franchise. Not only does that help them, but we're also part of a big team. And so if you go to wackyscienceshow.com, you see the entire team. And it doesn't look like just one guy doing a teeny tiny little science show. Why should we hire that guy? Why don't we get this global conglomerate to come in and do a wacky science show? And so that's me. And the way I can continue to make money off of that, I job these guys out to different school show agencies around the country. And they will book them, and everybody wins. Everybody makes some. Everybody gets a job.
Everybody does win because if you have 23 guys doing what you're doing, you're spreading the love and you're spreading the education. It's a lot more than you can do by yourself.
You know, and that brings me to the point of, you know, you develop something. So many guys develop a beautiful piece or a beautiful routine, and they want to hold it close to their chest. And I get that. If you want to be a worldwide entertainer, you don't want 10 guys doing your act. Jeff Dunham doesn't want 10 guys out there doing Ahmed the Dead Terrorist. You know, he wants to keep it himself. But if you're a local guy and not traveling outside your tri-state area, why not? You know, if I've got a guy down in North Carolina doing my science show, it sure isn't going to hurt me doing it in Ohio or Michigan. You know, help him. Spread the love and spread the education and motivate some kids to learn about science. So there's that show, which took off real successful doing that one, still looking for guys along the western part of the United States. Most of our guys are east of the Mississippi. Got a couple guys. I got a guy in Arizona. I got a guy in California looking to fill some more blank areas down in your area, down Southern California. I'd love to have a guy down there doing it. And the Uncle Sam show too. Also my constitutional show, which is called Uncle Sam's Comedy Jam Show, was really a huge success, especially while the election was going on. And there's certain times for that show. The science show was a universal anytime kind of show. But in terms of the Uncle Sam show, Memorial Day, Labor Day, you know, election years, election day, right around those times, Veterans Day, it's a real big show. You can bill a solid 4, 5, 6 weeks a year just doing that show alone. So those guys picked up that show and took off and ran with that. And I've got about 10 guys out there doing that one. Because, of course, no one outside America is going to do that one because no one cares about American history in Spain. So, what's coming next? I don't know. I'll probably put some shows on video and create some scripts and put the stuff out there. Kind of look into the future, you know, because you get up at the 2 o'clock in the morning with your large prostate and go to the bathroom and wonder, how long can you do this? So what's your escape plan? You know, what are you going to do, you know, in 15 more years? You know, hopefully in 15 more years, I got $2 million in the bank and I can be that crotchety old man who goes to conventions and tells kids they don't know what they're doing. I don't wear a leisure suit and be annoying and sit in the corner and just laugh at people.
Now, how do you market your shows? Is it mainly your online presence, or do you do a lot of other stuff?
You know, I've been doing this for 30 years now, so I got a pretty good following. Of course, in Michigan, a lot of people know about me. I know that a lot of guys that do school shows complain a lot about the PTAs, and they go, oh my gosh, you know, I did this school for 3 years in a row, and the PTA changed, and they didn't know me anymore, and I had to start from ground zero. But the big marketing technique for that, and the big way to avoid that, is you have to remember, PTA, P is only the parent part. There's also the T and the A, the teacher assist. That doesn't sound right. Something we got an NC-17 reading on this podcast. You get the T, okay? The T part is what we're talking about, which are the teachers. Parents might be the front people out there when you do the assembly show. You walk in the door. They're the ones that agree you get the check and everything. But the teachers, the parents aren't operating on their own. There's teachers out there who are part of the PTA who are also a part of charge of making the decisions for the assembly shows. And the teachers are the ones that stay at the school for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. Right. So if you can get in with those teachers, when the new PTA mom comes on board, she has no idea what she's doing. Or some PTA dad walks in, what's an assembly show? What do I do? Well, we love John Abrams. We love Doug Shear. We love this guy. Here's his brochure, or give him a call, or here's his website. If you can stay in contact with the teacher aspect of the PTA, you're in good shape. My show this morning, the principal says to me, hey, Doug, I'm retiring. I'm retiring in three months. You know, I'll be done by the end of July. I'll be out of here. After I wrap things up, he's like, I'm like, oh my God. And I felt bad. I got a picture of him. And he's been hiring me for 25 years.
Oh my.
I'm principal at an elementary school for 25 years. You know, and I'm like, pass it on. Please pass it on. And during my show today, at the end, I finally said to the teacher, I said, hey, I've been coming here for 25 years, teachers. You guys know me. Please keep inviting me back. Leadership is changing. You know, it's up to you to call me back next year, because the principal is always the guy booking the assembly show. Hopefully, you know, the teachers take the helm on that next year and they remember me and bring me back. So in terms of marketing, it's making those connections, not just with the people who book you, but with the people who are watching it. Because every one of those adults who's sitting in that room during a school show could be a person in power with a checkbook or a decision. You got to reach them too. They got to know who you are.
Right. I get a lot of calls from a PTA person saying, oh, well, we polled all the teachers and all the teachers like this particular show.
Yeah.
So we have to call you for that.
That's why they call you. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've had teachers say to me, or principal or parents say to me, hey, we took all the brochures we got in the mail, we spread them on the table, and then we got three kids in, and we said, what show do you guys want to see? I'm like, what? That's not a very scientific way of doing it. I mean, thank God they pulled out my brochure, you know, but it's like I feel bad for every other great entertainer that got kicked to the curb because their brochure wasn't as colorful or something, you know.
Right, or maybe they hadn't been to that school before.
Right.
All right, well, let's get into our fan questions, because every time I interview somebody new, I put on my Facebook that you can ask me to ask them questions, and here you go. So you have a ton of fan questions. First, Eric Sharp, who I interviewed a couple weeks ago, says, snazzy suit.
Yeah.
It's not really a question, but he's in there. Right. All right. So let's get into the questions. Okay. Leif David, a Dynamite Family magician out of Canada, asks a bunch of different questions. Some of them we've already gone over. What's the process for keeping in touch with existing customers?
Yeah, remember I told you about those guys that I hate? Well, Leif is one of the guys that I hate.
He has great promotional material.
Oh my God, does he or what? Bro, that's reason number one you can hate him, okay?
Holy moly.
He's young, he's very talented, and he's a good-looking kid. And so he's got all those things working against him in terms of me liking him very much. But yeah, he's a talented kid. I've seen his videos. He shared a couple with me. He does a good job. His question was, how do I keep in touch with existing customers?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, well, I think guys, people are getting away from direct mail, and I think that's a mistake. And I think they get away from direct mail because it's expensive and it's easier to say goodbye to direct mail and kick that to the curb. I think it's a mix of everything. And not only do you have to have your website, and I believe I don't know much about SEO. I don't know much about Google AdWords or any of those things. In fact, I don't run any Google AdWords right now. I've got a buddy of mine who's like, oh my gosh, you have to do this. So my goal, summer job, is to figure out what that's all about. Yeah. My website's been optimized. I built a new website a couple of years ago. And doing a website on your own is a wonderful thing, but you're probably not going to do it to its best capability. So you have to hire a pro, because they know all the website you see is the wallpaper on the house, you know, but if they didn't put those studs every 16 inches apart, that website's not going to work for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So that's where those professionals come in. So it's a mix of a lot of little things, you know. At the end of every year, I contact my existing schools. I say, hey, thanks again for having me. We're setting up for next year. September's going to be big, you know, and I've got these character shows, which are great for kicking off the school year. You have to tell the people what your show is good for. Well, we could do a science show in September. Well, you could, but wouldn't it be better to do a character show or a conflict resolution show or a diversity show to kind of set the mood for the school year and explain to the kids it's a loving and warm environment. We're all going to get along. Oh, that's a good idea.
Great idea. And we can do the science show later on in the year.
Exactly. Yeah. Book two, you get a discount, right? Yeah. So I think that's key. You can't just slap a brochure in front of them and say, here, pick a show. You got to tell them what show is good for when. Because you're the expert, you're the professional, they're looking for advice. So I think that's a good technique. Of course, being in touch with you. Every guy you ever talk to about business will say, keeping a customer is easier than getting a customer. And that's the truth. So if you can keep those customers, or you contact your PTAs at the end of coming in May, hey, are you doing the assemblies next year? If not, who is?
I send that exact email.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at least you put a bug in their body. You may not be ready, but here's who I am and here's what I do. And please keep me in mind. Can I contact you again in September?
Right. You know? I send that email. And if they send, a lot of times they will send something back saying, oh, I'm not in charge next year. Here is the person that's in charge of assemblies next year.
Thank you. They just handed you a check. They Thank really did.
Right, exactly. That new person.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will use your name saying I contacted, you know, so now you're not just some random guy. Julie Smith said, I should contact you. Oh, I know Julie.
Right. And yeah. She asks, how was Doug last year?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Leif also asks, what are some examples of how you modify material based on age of audience? Because I know you have, a lot of times there'll be two or three different assemblies at the same school. One will be K through second or third. Yeah. And then the second one will be third through fifth or fourth through sixth.
You know, I think it depends on the show. It depends on what you're doing. If you're doing an environmental show and talking about air, land, and water pollution, if you're talking about conservation and shutting off the lights, you don't have to modify it because it's the same. Every kid has the same capabilities, be it a kindergartner or a fifth grader or a sixth grader. They can get the same message. But if you're doing a show that's more cerebrally demanding, cognitively important, like you're doing a math show, we might not talk about fractions with the younger kids the way we do the older kids. The younger ones, you know, we might just talk about pieces and parts, and those are fractions. Whereas with the older ones, you can ask them, what's a bigger fraction, 1/6 or 1/12? And they all say 1/12. You know, and you can explain why that's wrong. So I think it depends on the actual show. If you're teaching, am I bully-proofing show? Am I bully-proofing with character traits show? For the older kids, I tell the story about how I was chased home and punched in the face and, you know, how I was bullied. With the younger ones, I don't do that. They don't need that graphic representation because for little kids, they're not experiencing that kind of bullying in their school. In fact, little ones usually aren't being bullied, rather than they're being excluded. They're not being allowed to play, or someone's breaking their pencil or taking their toys on without asking. Whereas with the older ones, it becomes more of an exclusionary thing where they don't let kids hang out or these rumors. So you have to know your material and you have to know what those particular kids are experiencing. And the only way you learn that is either by having kids yourself, okay, which is an expensive way to do it, which you and I have both done, or you ask a teacher or you ask a trusted friend or you call the school's guidance counselor. And every guidance counselor I've ever talked to or called, they're more than happy to sit down with you or hand you a pamphlet or a brochure or direct you to the materials they use in the classroom. I got to tell you, most of it with character stuff is common sense. Most of it is simple common sense. It's like I said in my conflict resolution show, it's universal. I mean, you can be a kindergartner, whether they have the ability to use an I message and say, I feel mad when you call me names, I think it's dependent on the child's maturity. It doesn't matter if they're in second grade. They may have the maturity to be able to do that. You can't not teach them that, because even if you reach three kids in second grade with that message, you're making a difference. Now, granted, the older kids, they can do it. You know, will they do it? Adults don't do it. Probably not.
Right.
But at least you lay the groundwork and you let them recognize there is a way of doing this. And I see when I'm doing my show, I see the parent, the teachers look at each other and you can tell on their face. My husband this morning, I yelled at him and told him it was all his fault.
Yeah. One of the things that I try to do during my assemblies is not only are we teaching the kids, but we're also teaching the teachers.
Oh yeah.
How to treat the kids.
You know, yeah. And you're also presenting to the teachers some terminology and some verbiage that makes sense to the kids.
Yep.
You know, for example, you can't talk about prejudice with first and second and third graders. They don't know what prejudice is, but they do know what being fair is. They do know what not guessing about other people because of the way they look or act or sound, not guessing about them. You know, but that's basically the definition of what prejudice is. We guess about people because of the color of their skin or where they're from.
Right.
You know, but we don't use the word prejudice. prejudice and diversity circus show. It'd be stupid to use that word because children don't use that word.
Right.
Yes. Only adults do. It's an adult word. Not to get on a soapbox, but the word tolerance. I hate the word tolerance. We want to teach tolerance. Oh, okay. I'm just going to tolerate everybody, even though they're going to irritate me.
Don't get me started on tolerance.
I know, right? It's like, come on, teachers. God bless them. They got the hardest job in the world. And I got to tell you, I have more respect for an elementary school teacher than any other career on the face of this earth. Getting harder and harder with more and more issues the kids are having these days. And they're trying the best. But sometimes they kind of miss the point. They miss the boat when it comes to speaking to kids on a level they understand.
Sure. You know? It's got to be a hard job, though. I mean, I've never done it myself, but they have 6 hours with the kids. We have 45 minutes and all the bells and whistles, and it's much easier for us.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shorter period of time.
You know, and that kind of brings it to a point where I met a magician at a magic convention, and he was a school show guy, and he says, yeah, you know what I do? I do two tricks with an educational message, and I tell the kids, hey, you were really good for those two tricks. Let me give you a reward. Let me just do a trick now that has no message whatsoever. And I'm like, what? What? Were your two tricks that you did so miserable you had to reward them? You know, you're doing something wrong. You hit the nail on the head. You have 45 minutes with these kids. And if every message, everything you do in the show should be driving towards your message, reinforcing your message, driving the plot of your show forward, or you're reinforcing something the teachers have said, or reinforcing something you said. The guys that do, well, I do a couple of educational messages in my school show. We only have 45 minutes. That's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much you have to cover. Why would you waste 6 minutes just doing a sucker trick or something that's just going to get the kids screaming and yelling for no apparent reason? And
You might as well put the lesson in that sucker trick.
You could. Oh, yeah, you could. You just as easily could. I have a real big pet peeve against guys that do sucker tricks in schools. Not that I never have. I do on my Halloween show. From an adult's point of view, and while you're getting the kids worked up, if they're sitting there watching you turn this piece of cardboard around, they're kind of going, oh my God, I could have done that. You know, I could have made this kid scream and yell. They don't understand the nuance of what it takes to properly present a sucker trick. But from their point of view, they see the simplicity of it. And all they do is go, oh my God, I'm getting a headache. These kids are yelling. I wish he would stop doing that. So I try to avoid those at all costs because you don't want the teacher walking out of there going, yeah, it was a great show, but there was one point where he gave me a headache. You know, you don't want that.
All right. So David Scale, terrific magician and hypnotist out of Southern California, he asks, we'll get back to our fan questions. I know we can go on and on and on. I love talking to you, Doug.
Thanks. Just been all week. I got till 2:30. Let's go. All
right. Okay, here we go. Who do you target your market to at a school?
So, meaning what grades do I target it to or who do I market to?
I think he's talking about, like, if you're sending a mail piece, do you send it to the PTA president, the principal? Who is it?
It's both. You can do both. Here's a sneaky marketing trick that I have done every September. I do this. I put a fake name on I do bulk mail, but I put a fake name on the front of every envelope. So it says Corrine Johnson. Attention Corrine Johnson, you know, so-and-so elementary school. And it says PTA after Corrine Johnson's name. Typically junk mail will go in the garbage unless it has a name on it. Well, Corrine Johnson is not someone who exists in that school, but guess what? The secretary doesn't know that because it's brand new. It's September. Maybe Corrine Johnson is a new mom that she hasn't met yet. I better put this in the PTA mailbox because it says PTA. Okay. So instead of going in the garbage or actually having to have a legitimate name on that envelope, it goes into the PTA mailbox. So that goes there. The PTA has a set budget. Typically, they don't get their budget, though, until maybe mid-October after they started their first fundraiser and had some money come in. But the principal typically has money, too, whether it's grant money through a Title I or some kind of budget he or she has. So typically, the September shows that I book are usually booked through the principal over the summer, because they're trying to start the school year off and they got some money to spend. But then as the school year progresses on in, it's typically the PTA or the PTO or the PTEIO or whatever name they have that will book you. For reading month, most of the time, I would say probably 60 to 70% of the time, that falls on the lap of the media specialist. So if you're doing a reading show for Read Across America or March is Reading Month, you want to target those people. it's funny, with the economy changing and the money people being tighter and tighter, I used to market and book a whole year in advance. Now, if I market like in January, I'm marketing for my merch shows about 2 months in advance because people hold the money close to their chest and they're not ready to spend it yet.
Yeah, I found that too. In fact, I think it was February this year, I started to panic because I was looking at my May and I was thinking, oh, I don't have any shows, very many shows booked in May. And then all of a sudden they started coming in March. And in April, earlier this month, I've been booking tons of shows for May.
Yeah, go figure, right? But I think that's what it is. People are afraid to spend their money like they used to. It used to be, let's book them all in September. We'll book 6 assembly shows. We'll get all the money spent in September, then we're done with it. Not anymore. They hold it closer to their chest. So in terms of marketing, it's a constant contact. It really is. It's a great name for a company because you have to be in constant contact with them. And if you tell them, hey, listen, election month is coming up. It's November. Take my American history show. Great for November. Or April is actually Earth Day, so you can do your environmental show then. I'll even go so far as making up a month. Hey, did you know that May is math month? Oh, it is? Yeah, you better book my math show. You know, I read that somewhere.
Well, that's great.
Why not, right? They don't know. I don't know. They don't care. They're going to enjoy the show. Everyone's happy. Who cares, right?
You got to know what you're talking about.
Right. <That's fine.
laughs> They're just going to believe you.
Right, right. Or they'll go to your website and go, hey, May is math month. Doug Shear says so, and so is his website. It must be true.
And they're going to put it on their calendar. They're going to share it with all the other schools in the county.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that also brings it to the point of, I think in May is Teacher Appreciation Week, which is a gold mine for assembly show performers, because the best way to appreciate a teacher is not to invite them on stage during the assembly show, which I have been requested to do. Hey, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. We thought it'd be fun if you come in and pick nothing but teachers for your assembly show. Yeah. I go, really? Your teachers are going to hate you. Okay. Yeah. How about this? How about you bring me in? I will do a 45-minute per hour show and you treat the teachers to coffee and donuts and crumpets in the break room for an hour. Oh my God, that's a great idea. Yeah, give them time off, okay? Much better idea. So you'll book a whole week of teacher appreciation shows and the teachers aren't there. And then bring in some parents to stand guard. And of course, you always ask for that. Don't throw a bunch of kids in with no supervision. Bring in some parent volunteers. Let them sit in the audience. As long as there's some adult supervision, you know, the kids are going to behave better because they know, right?
Right.
Yeah. Does that answer that question?
I think that does.
Okay, good. All
right. So David Scale also asks, how do you market a variety of shows while still presenting yourself as a specialist? You're a specialist in the school market.
Well, I think you become the go-to assembly guy. You don't become the go-to math guy or the go-to, you know, memory game show guy. You become the go-to school show guy. And I've had people call me, hey, Doug, we're looking for a show about the Olympics. Do you have one? Nope, sorry, can't help you there. But I know a guy who does jump roping. Maybe he'll fit. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And I tell people that too. I say, listen, Doug, we had an assembly show. It was this guy and he was horrible. Oh, we'll never have him again. And I'm like, look, if you want to book an assembly show that's not me, I get it. You're cheating on me. I can handle that. Okay. But call me up because I know most of these guys and I'll tell you what I know about them. You know, I'm not going to throw anybody into the bus, you know, but I'll tell you if they work a lot or if they don't work a lot. And that should tell you enough. What was the question? What are we talking about?
So you market yourself as the school assembly guy.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a school assembly, I'm a company. I've had people call me and say, hey, I want to be part of your team. I'm like, well, my team is me. So, because my website looks assemblyshows.com is a great name as an all-encompassing. Looks like a company that books assembly shows. It looks like one of the school assembly referral services, but it's not. But if I am the guy who does school shows and I've got a whole variety of them, hey, let's just call Doug and see what he has, if he has something about this. And if I don't, I'll pass it on to someone who does. Right?
Right. One of the tricks that I do is if it's a brand new school and they've never seen me before and they hire me for a particular show, whatever it is, that week, in fact, I make an announcement during the show in a funny kind of John way, that I do other shows and here's what I offer. And this,
oh yeah.
So
oh,
that yeah. way by the end, usually the PTA person will ask me, oh, you have this show that you talked about? Oh, can we bring that in next month? Oh yeah, of course you can.
Oh, that's critically important. You definitely have to say that because if you're doing if you're the animal guy doing magic, why would they think you have a bully show? They would have no idea you have a bully show. You're the animal guy.
Exactly.
You know? You take that opportunity to pitch everything you do. And you do it in a way that doesn't look like a sales pitch. I always do it by saying, hey, kids, you were so much fun. I love coming here today. And I really want to come back. In fact, if I do come back, guess what? I don't have to bring this show. I can bring my math show, my science show, my diversity show, or something completely different. So when I see you again, you'll see a whole new show. Do you guys want to do that? Yeah. Then listen, when we leave the assembly today, we have to be nice and quiet, blah, 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 right? So the teachers want to have assemblies again, and maybe I'll see you again in the future. What? Do you have more shows? Yeah. I used to be so bold as to say to the teachers, hey, listen, I'm on the road doing shows all the time, but I don't want to be on the road. I want to be home. I'm close to home today. So please, if you like my show, grab one of my brochures that are on this table over here and give it to your friends and colleagues at other schools. I'd love to be able to visit with them too. I think it's pretty bold. I don't do that all the time. I guess I kind of read the audience and feel it out.
I'm way bold at the end of the show. At the end of the show, I say, hey, kids, you guys all had fun. Everybody, we had fun. Okay, here's what you do. You're going to go back to class today. You're going to go back to class and be all radical and crazy and say, oh, I saw a snake. I saw a chinchilla, blah, blah, blah. Don't do that. Because if you go back to class and you're all radical and crazy, they will not invite you back. And I have all sorts of other shows that I can bring to your school. I have something called The Bully Game. It's a very famous show that I know you guys all love. If you want to come back, this is what you do. Go back to your class, talk in your quietest voices. Remember everything we talked about in the show. Then maybe, just maybe, they'll invite me back. If that sounds good, everybody whisper, that yeah. sounds good. Everybody goes, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's perfect. And the kids love you for that. They love you for that.
Absolutely. And I pitched other shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You snuck in. They know what you're doing.
Of course. They look at each other and they laugh as I'm doing this.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
All right. So Tim Kate, who's an entertainer out of Illinois.
Tim's one of my guys. Tim's got my Uncle Sam show. Yeah, I know Tim.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, Tim's a good guy. Yep. Yeah.
Well, here you go. He asked a question on my Facebook. What are your favorite resources when writing an assembly? For example, how do you know if the way you're teaching conflict resolution, for example, is the same way the school does?
You know, the resources are there. All you have to do is ask for them. If you want to develop a show on how to properly spread cream cheese on a bagel, you can ask a teacher, hey, do you have any books on that? What do you guys use as your resources? You know, because they'll hand you the stuff. They will. And you know what? Here's the thing about schools. It changes. But the methods don't change, just the vocabulary changes. Mm. So my conflict resolution show is based on something called the debug system, which came out a zillion years ago. They don't use the debug system anymore. By name, they use other programs, but it's the same stuff. Mm. You know, because what happens is these teachers or principals retire, and they write a program, and they take what's existing, and they change all the verbiage in it, and they re-release it and make a fortune. So now all you have to do is keep teaching the exact same thing, but maybe we don't say witness anymore in a bully situation. Maybe now we say bystander,
right?
You know, or maybe we say upstander, depending on what the district is using. So when I go into a school, I'll typically ask them, hey, are you guys focusing on anything in particular with these character traits that you see on my backdrop? Oh yeah, it's respect week. You know what? I'm going to focus my show today on how this show ties into respect. And I'm doing the same show, but whenever I have a chance to improvise and, you know, add something to it, showing how this is respectful or this is not respectful, I will do that. And I think that's the big key. Teaching to the way that teachers are teaching simply means using the same verbiage they're using, because you don't want to confuse the kids. Some right. schools don't even want to say bully anymore because, oh, we're naming a kid something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Troublemaker, whatever, or someone's acting like a bully, or if you could please say someone who's exhibiting bullying behavior, we'd appreciate that more than saying bully. Can you do that? Yeah, I guess.
We'll try. Yeah, I've gotten that too. My show is actually called The Bully Game, and I've gotten calls from folks saying, can you not use the word bully in your show? And I'm like, it's called The Bully Game.
And it's on the backdrop.
All of my material. It's on everything. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the little tricks that I use when changing verbiage in my show is I go to the California Department of Education website.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they have one in Michigan, but I imagine every state has one.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, they do.
And I just look up the verbiage that they're using, because chances are that the verbiage they're using is the same verbiage that the teachers need to use.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. Yep. Yeah, that's a great resource. That's a great idea. It's a simple, easy way to do it. Don't have to ask for a book or anything. It's all right there spelled out for you.
All right, so Annie Benanny. You know Annie Benanny, right?
I hate Annie Benanny.
Annie Benanny lives near me.
Annie's great. She's so sweet. Yeah.
She is great. For those of you that don't know out there, she's an amazing balloon artist. She has a balloon show out of Southern California here. She asks, what kind of classroom materials have you found the teachers like best?
They like the stuff they don't have to look at.
I've noticed that too.
You know, the only time I ever give away an instruction sheet is a take-home thing for the kids to reinforce what we taught. You know, whether it's a coloring sheet that has the four steps of the conflict resolution method, or it's my math sheet, which is, hey, Xerox this off and send it home with the kids, which will give them, you know, it'll reinforce the little puzzles, games, and tricks that we showed. That's what they want. The teachers are so overwhelmed and inundated with things that I don't find it necessary. I have only once, I think, in my 32-year career ever been asked for any kind of teacher resources. For my Uncle Sam show, we have a sheet that goes to the teachers ahead of time that says, hey. We do it for Uncle Sam for a particular reason. There's a federal law that says they must teach the Constitution on Constitution Day every year, and we get around that by sending them an advanced sheet. If my show is after September 17th, they can simply say to the kids, hey, Uncle Sam's coming next week, and here's what he's going to talk about. Check mark, check mark, check mark. They just did their job teaching the Constitution. Now I come back and reinforce it. If I'm coming to a school before September 17th, and they have to talk about it September 17th, they will get a review sheet that says, hey, do you remember Uncle Sam last Tuesday? Here's four questions I have to ask you about his show. Check the box. Now they've fulfilled that federal requirement. So that's the kind of stuff they love, because now they just fulfilled the federal requirement, something they're forced to do, they have to do by law. And that review sheet has four simple, fun questions on it that they can ask the kids, and they click that off. But in terms of packets, I see some guys present packets and information. It's on their website. You can download it. I'd like to talk to the guys who actually get that used a lot. I like to see, because I don't know much about it. Honestly, I can't answer that question.
There is a disconnect between the PTA or whoever's booking the show and the teachers sometimes.
Because
sometimes what will happen is I give a whole package, a teacher's guide and this and that. The PTA loves that. They say, oh my gosh, your show comes with the show plus the teacher's guide plus a coloring sheet plus a word search. It comes with all of these different things. They like that. The PTA likes that. And I know for a fact that most of that stuff doesn't get used by the PTA, by the teachers or the students.
No, they don't. You're right. It's a great selling point, isn't it, though? It's a really good reinforcing. Hey, I do this beyond so-and-so. I do this. He doesn't do that. Book me. So right. Maybe it's a good thing to put. Hey, speaking of Annie Benanny, she was in town last summer, and she and I went to the Hitsville Museum in downtown Detroit, which is where Motown started. So my invitation to any of you guys out there listening, if you ever come to Detroit or Michigan area, hook me up. I got places I want to show you. It'll be fun. All right. Yeah.
I will do that if I come out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We got this place called Marvin's Mechanical Museum. And this guy who just died about a year ago, Marvin Yagoda was his name. He was collecting all kinds of animatronic toys and having them built and remade and refabricated for himself. And he's got this coin-operated museum, which has got just the craziest, most ridiculous stuff in it. He took some original posters from magicians, which are worth thousands and thousands of dollars, and he basically ruined them by putting his name Marvin on them and hanging on the wall. And anybody who comes here, David Williamson was there, David Copperfield was there, Lance Burke has been there. Anyone who comes through town, we're talking about magicians now, of course, but anybody who loves showbiz would love this museum. And it's only about 5 miles from my house. That'll be fun.
I'd love that.
That's crazy cool. You can look it up on web. Just type in Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum, and you'll find all kinds of documentaries and stories and news features. He's been featured around the world in like CBS Good Morning and all these TV shows. Cool stuff. You'll see all about it.
Andy Benanny also asks, or actually, this goes back to your wife, the very beginning of this podcast. Mm-hmm. She says, I would love for you to mention the resources you have about working with special needs kids.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, my wife and I spoke years ago at Kadabra, and Stan Allen saw us talk there, and he said, hey, can you write me an article for my magazine? I said, yeah, sure. So we wrote an article for Magic Magazine on working with special needs kids on stage. It is on every one of the school show performer. It's on every one of the Facebook groups that I belong to. You can find it at Surplus Magic Exchange. You can find it on the school show performer website. In fact, I invite anybody out here who's not part of the school show performer Facebook page to please send a join request. We'd love to have you on there if you're interested in doing school shows. It's a page that I mod. Chad Chesmark set it up. Chad's a Disney magician, does an incredible job. I hate him too. So good. I posted the file on all the on those Facebook groups. You can find the file. Go to the file section. You will find that PDF. If not, just go to my website, DougShear.com. You can find it there too.
Okay. And you have a number of different products out. What do you have going on there?
I wrote a book called Entertaining Education. I call it a comprehensive guide to creating and performing educational school shows. And it's a 100-page book. It's not really thick, but it's got a lot of information inside there about how to develop an educational show, how to develop educational routines, how to make your show better, not by adding magic tricks, but by delving into the ideas of plot and subplot and character development and running gags and that kind of stuff through a show. Most magic shows, most school shows, most shows I've seen in terms of the magic or music or the variety arts, don't really have a storyline. A lot of the times it's just one song, another song, another song, or I'll juggle this, I'll juggle that, I'll juggle this. Chef Anton, who's a pool hustler slash magician, who's well known in the LA area, wrote an article for Genie Magazine probably 20 years ago. He talked about this juggler, an imaginary juggler who had a ladder, and he kept approaching the ladder and he put it down. And eventually we learned throughout his juggling performance that his goal was to be able to stand on the top of this ladder and perform a juggling stunt, but he's always been afraid to do it. He promised his dad he would do it, but his dad died. He's never done it. He's afraid to go towards it. He's building this whole thing up, okay? So finally, at the end of the show, he jumps up on this ladder and climbs the top and juggles. People are crying and they're cheering. He's doing it for his dad. And that's a big sappy story, but oh my God, talk about taking your juggling show to the next level. Now you've given a theme, a storyline, and a plot. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and the people go nuts. And I talk about that. I talk about trying to add context to your show in terms of not just doing magic tricks, but also adding something to it, be it a subplot, being a theme to a show. Not only can you have a theme show, I mean, I can give you more examples I do for my show, but instead of just having 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 tricks or 10 effects or 10 lessons that we learn, there's actually a text that weaves the entire show together. So at the beginning, we learn this, and at the end, it resolves this way. We talk about that in the book. So Entertaining Education has got that along with 16 of my scripts from my shows. There's also links to, there's a password secure website you can go to and you can watch my performance of those actual scripts. Mm-hmm. And then we dive into other aspects of performing as well as the special needs article is in that book too. And that also comes with a copy of my Diversity Circus DVD, which is my entire school show. And we took the DVD and we turned it into a graphic novel. So that's something I sell when I do my shows. Back of room for a family night. Kids get to take home a comic book of one of my shows. You know, it's the old, remember, like you watch Star Trek and then you go in the bookstore back in 1978 and there'd be a comic book of Luke Skywalker. And there were actual photographs from the movie. You'd be able to read the Star Wars story by looking at these photographs. And my goal was to take one of my school shows and turn that into that. So I turned it into a photographic graphic novel. So you can see pictures throughout the show. And then, of course, you can read the show too. So that comes with that package. And then I have some other props and gags for performers. I've got a headless, what they call a corn silk. It's a muscle man. You drape it in front of the kid and the kid looks like he's standing behind a muscle man cutout. And then I've got a new product called Punctuation Pandemonium, which is direct from my reading show, which is a take on Victor Borge's phonetic punctuation, but it uses volunteers on stage with a completely different story. We took quotation marks and punctuation marks and commas and periods and turned them into emojis. And we use those in the show and in that particular effect. It's a comedy routine that teaches the kids about punctuation. And that's available.
That's a nice long routine, right?
It is. It's probably about a 6-minute routine. And it not only reinforces a message, but it's filled with laughs nonstop from the very beginning to the very end.
So if someone were to get that, it's a great, not only is it a good routine, but it would be a good lesson in how to put together a routine.
Yeah, probably so. I took what was existing. I took what Victor Borge did with his particular routine called phonetic punctuation, and you can watch that on YouTube too. And I thought, oh my gosh, I actually met him backstage after I won a prize for a radio station. I talked to him about this, and I explained that in the book. And he's like, I don't know how you'll ever do this for kids, but good luck if you ever do. And he kind of gave me permission. He ended up doing it on Zoom, which is one of the TV kids shows years ago. which died flat, I think, because he did it not in front of a live audience, but in front of just a camera. It was funny for the viewers watching at home, but seeing it live on stage bring tears to your eyes. And then I just took it to another three more levels beyond that. Not to say that I can improve on his genius. I just took it to a different market. I took it to a children's market instead of an adult market. And I adapted it accordingly.
Is that a different website than your assembly website?
Yeah, my assemblyshows.com website is my school show site, but dougshear.com is my products for performers page.
All right, how about one book or two books, a couple of books, and then we'll let you go.
Yeah, a couple of books. There is a book, this guy, Jerry Weintraub, was a movie producer in his later years, but he was also like one of the personal managers for not only Elvis Presley, but Frank Sinatra and John Denver and all those guys. And it's basically his life story. He talks about how he found John Denver in a little bar in Greenwich Village and turned him into a star. He talks about Elvis Presley. There's some great stories in there. Elvis hired him and said, listen, kid, your job is to make sure I never play to an empty seat. They ended up selling a matinee show in conjunction with an evening sold out show. But the matinee show was only sold about 3/4. And there are all these empty seats the day of the show. Jerry goes into how he solved that problem and how he guaranteed that Elvis played only to a packed house with not an empty seat in the place. He talks about stories about Frank Sinatra. But it's a really cool book in terms of looking at business and the mindset behind a personal manager and how you can become a star. And there's a lot of lessons in that book, which are fantastic. Along with that book, more business-minded people.
Wait, what is that book called?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's called You'll Know I'm Dead When I Stop Talking.
Okay.
You'll Know I'm Dead When I Stop Talking. Jerry Weintraub.
Got it.
He was the guy who produced The Karate Kid, Ocean's 11, those kinds of things. He worked with Brad Pitt and George Clooney and that entire gang of people. Mm-hmm. Later in life. He just died about a couple years ago, so he stopped talking finally. You'll Know I'm Dead When I Stop Talking is the name of the book. You know, he's dead now, sadly, because, man, boy, that guy's had some great stories. Such a good book. Howie Mandel's biography, by the way. If you ever want to read about a guy who lived through, oh, my gosh, Howie Mandel's biography is fantastic. So funny, too.
Is it called something, or is it just Howie Mandel's biography?
And it's called Don't Touch Me, I think. He tells a story about how he was hired to work in an orgy. Oh. And then literally during downtime, at this orgy downtime, he got up there and did a stand-up comedy to give everybody a break.
Oh,
you gotta be
Martin kidding. Has a great biography too. And
oh yeah,
because
yeah.
I live in Orange County, he grew up here and worked at Knott's Berry Farm, kind of right down the street from where I live.
Oh yeah.
So it's a great read because all the places that he mentions are right around here.
That is so cool. Steve Martin, of course, is one of our heroes, all of our heroes, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. Can I mention one more book?
Please.
A guy named Chris Voss, V-O-S-S. He wrote a book called Never Split the Difference. And Chris Voss was one of the top hostage negotiators for the FBI and a lot of governments around the world.
Oh.
And this guy is unbelievable. But in terms of business sense, he talks a lot about negotiating tactics and getting what you want without having to get anything up. And there is something I learned in that book which guarantees 95% that the people who never get back to you on email will get back to you.
Wow.
So you always have those emails where you send out 17 emails after they inquire and they never get back to you.
Yeah.
There's one thing you can put in your subject line that is unbelievable. It's like magic and people will respond to you all of a sudden. And I learned that from the book. And should I give it away? Should I tell you what it is?
No. Don't give it away because then people will have to get the book and read it and look at it. And
it's in there. It is in there. It's crazy.
That's a good teaser.
Oh, I wish I was making money. Hey, get him at dougshear.com. Let me call the publisher first. Can I buy these wholesale?
Well, excellent. Thank you, Doug, for doing my podcast. You have been awesome. Where can folks get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you?
You'll find me on the School Show Facebook page. I'm always there, School Show Performers. There's two School Show Performer Facebook pages. Join the one that's got the bigger audience. The other one came along a little while later, and that's not us. But also, yeah, find me on Facebook. Friend me on Facebook. Just Doug Shear. Assembly Shows is my Facebook business page. I'm on Twitter. Sometimes on Twitter there. You send me an email through my website, dougshear.com, if you want to get a hold of me.
And so, if you want to do school assemblies, go on Doug's Facebook page because there's all sorts of questions and answers. Doug's on there all the time. I'm on there all the time. There are professionals on that page all the time answering any question.
I never told you my horror stories. I got all kinds of horror stories.
You know what? Before I let you go, then give me a horror story.
Yeah, I used to work the auto show. I spent 18 years working the auto shows for Chevrolet. That's how I developed my ability to write a message into magic. Because if you got to talk about the 18 cup holes in the Chevy Lumina APV, you got to make it entertaining. There's no better place to learn but that. You know, so it's like, oh my God, I got to do what? Why do people care about 18 cup holders? What a stupid thing. Real quick, we were on these big, beautiful, multi-million-dollar displays and incredibly expensive stuff. And there's a big turntable and there's a beautiful girl and I'm up there doing my magic tricks. And they put me on this turntable one day. And I kept my stuff in the trunk of the vehicle. And I think it was just a small Suburban or something. And I pop open the hatch and I pull my stuff out, set my magic show up, and I would do it. And I would turn the turntable on and the car would go spinning behind me. Well, I forgot to close the hatch one day of the Suburban. It was a Tahoe, it was a Chevy Tahoe, I remember now. I'm doing my show. I just started doing a couple lines, gathering a crowd, people are crowding around. And I hear this whining, whirring noise, and the crowd's looking above my head. There's an explosion. Kabam!
Oh.
The tailgate got stuck on one of the scene pieces, the set pieces, and it kept pressing until the back glass blew out right behind me. And there is there's glass trickling down on my head as I'm trying to start my magic show. It was this huge explosion. It was that temporary. It's a safety glass, so nobody got hurt, right?
People are thinking, wow, that guy's amazing.
That's amazing. He just blew out that back window on that Tahoe. How cool was that? So there's that. And there's the time I made the kid cry by burning his shoe. You know, we've had those experiences and stuff. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I actually, it's fun, make it a real short story. Get a kid up on stage, take off his shoe, stick it in a box.
Yep.
The box starts smoking. The shoe comes out. It's all burned to a crisp. It's a magic trick that we do. And we use that in our problem solving show. How are we going to solve this problem? Well, the kid busts down crying, bawling his eyes out, bawling. Inconsolable. So I say to my wife, we got to abort. Get the shoe out here. We got to give this kid's shoe back. We're going to go back. So we end the trick. He's happy. He goes back to his seat. Teacher comes up afterwards, goes, yeah. That kid you picked and burned his shoe, his house burned down about 6 months ago. He escaped with nothing but the clothing on his back. And then you get him on stage and you burn his shoe.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, that's the best story ever. What are the odds of that happening, right?
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. You couldn't make this up. There's 400 kids in a school, and he's the one I choose to burn his shoe. What are the odds of that happening, you know?
You picked the right one.
I picked the right one. Yeah, teacher was laughing about it. It became a big joke. It was hysterical. But the poor kid's probably – he probably hates magicians to this day, you know?
I think sometimes we get lucky. I can't tell you how many times that I've picked some kid from the audience, and it happens to be the PTA person, the person that hires me's kid.
Not just you, huh? Okay, it happens to me too. Oh, my God. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. There's 300 or 400 kids out there. I don't know how it happens.
It does. It's some kind of psychic weird. There's some kind of ether out there, and we're drawn to those kids for some reason. I don't know what it is. It happens all the time.
All right, well, I'll let you go, Doug, because I know you have another show coming up this afternoon.
I do, and I'm not going to say goodbye.
Okay. We'll just keep on talking until the microphones fall off.
It's always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I appreciate all of your time and thanks to all my variety artists out there. If you found this podcast valuable, tell a friend. That's how we can spread the word. Feel free to reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com or join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist. On Twitter, I am at The Variety Artist with no T at the end because it didn't have room. Or visit my website at www.thevarietyartist.com. Do we still have to say www?
I don't think we do that. Now we say http://. Yeah, that's what you said.
TheVarietyArtist.com. All right, now everybody go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun. Thanks a lot, Doug.
You bet. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to TheVarietyArtist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.